You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. We're presented to you, as always, by DraftKings. Try to make it a unique podcast. Hope you give us a good rating, comments. Always appreciate seeing your comments about the Business of Sports podcast. We're produced by Jack Connell, musical producer, my son, Sam Brandt. That's the music you hear under us. Got a special edition today. I have an old friend in the sports business space, someone that I came up with, that he was kind of the OG in the industry, and now he's back in a new space. His name is Darren Rebell. Darren has started a new website, a new venture, with backers that include Ted Leonsis and Steve Ross and Gabe Plotkin and David Blitzer. It's called collect.com without the O, C-L-L-C-T, without the O and the E, without the vowel, C-L-L-C-T.com. It's everything you want to know about collectibles in sports and otherwise. I wanted to give him a forum to explain it and to explain the space, of which I admit I'm a novice in the world of collectibles. He will tell you all about it. I think it's a vast and wide-ranging interview that you will enjoy. And after that, stick around. I have a couple rants that I want to share with you. But without further ado, my special guest, talking about his new website that's all over the news, collect.com, here's Darren Rebell. Darren Rebell needs no introduction and a good friend and colleague of mine. We've known each other a long time since I got into the sports media business. I'm actually the sports business media business. As you remember, Darren, I left the Packers. It's been now 12, 13 years. And I wanted to do two things with my life at that point, not get back and do another team, not work in the NFL. And I have never wanted that. But I wanted to sort of break down the business of sports from my perspective, kind of the inner workings of front office and agent side, primarily football, but all sports, in two areas, in media and in academia. And I just want to say, you know, when I look to the media side, your name immediately came up and you were gracious to me as I really began a new career in media. And in your area of media, and you were kind of the goat in that area, the godfather, the old, what is it, the OG. But anyway, I want to say right away, thanks for that. And thanks for being a beacon in this area that has grown so much in the past 12 years.
It's amazing. I mean, when I think about when I started doing it in 2000, it's what I wanted to do. I knew it was a niche, but I also thought that it would become more important. And just to think about how you can't be a fan these days if you don't understand the business. You just seem like that angry person yelling at the clouds or on the radio that just doesn't make any sense. So you seem it. I never thought it would be that way, but you know, I think the niche has kind of broadened out, and I think it's funny to see, you know, how, you know, they had to put me in NBA 2K to do endorsements and stuff like that. And kids, the way kids are talking about the business of sports, not in the way we ever did. That kind of makes me proud and happy. And I'm glad it's so relevant.
I think, you know, I'm being braggacious about myself, but I think we're a big part of that. I think we brought to the media a sense, you know, back when I started doing this or tweeting or writing, I don't know if people wanted to hear about the inner workings of contracts and cap effects and dead cap and how rookie contracts are pittance compared to veteran contracts. But now you can't read a story about a transaction without the business part. You just can't.
I smile when I'm just out in public and kind of just listening to conversations and people saying, yeah, let me tell you about running backs in the NFL, like why it doesn't make sense and how, you know, the average is 3.3 years and people are just talking like that. It's pretty amazing just to kind of like overhear that, you know, in 2005, that never would have happened. People would not have talked that way.
And my time at ESPN, you know, as we both had times there, you a lot longer than I did, but it was just more, I'm eternally grateful for that time. But I saw it there too. And I saw a lot of my colleagues, especially former players, that would like buttonhole me and take me in a corner and take me to lunch. Like, tell me about this stuff. It was just this new phenomenon. Like, wow, you can talk about this stuff. Like, it's not just who's going to win the game and who's a bad coach and who's going to be all pro. I mean, it was really something for me to see, and good to be in on that time. But again, we were talking about a niche where, you know, I said to Seth Markman one time, we should do a show on this, you know, after NFL Live or before it, like, let's do the business of the NFL. And he kind of looked at me and said something like, I think 100 people will watch that.
Well, I always laugh about my arguments that I had, yeah, you know, when I had a story about someone, I will remember this forever, when Kobe changed his jersey number, you know, from 8 to 24, and we broke it. And I was arguing with them that this needs to be the top story on ESPN.com. And they're like laughing at me. I go, no, you don't understand, because these people who've had his jersey, who are still with him, who were with him through Eagle Colorado, who are supporting him, who are voting with their money, with their wallets, like, this is a very big deal. And I think at the time, you know, 2006 or whatever, I think it wasn't ready for that. But I think, like, today, if LeBron changes number again, or a big star changed their number, I think it would be closer to the top than ever. Because I think people understand that, you know, you could do whatever popularity lists, but when the top of jersey list comes out, that's it. That's with your wallet, and it means a lot more than if someone's just saying it.
Yeah. And it's both of us seeing this transformation in our respective expertise, because, you know, last week, Stephon Diggs is traded from the Bills to the Texans. And right away, it's going to be a $31 million dead cap hit. There was no way that was even a discussion.
Right.
10 years ago. And
I agreed.
I take a little pride for that too.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
People still think, just my pet peeve, people still think dead cap is actually cash. The cash
right.
is already.
That is true. It's
just accounting. Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of the niche, you've taken the niche further as we bring you up to speed to the present. You went from covering sports business to covering a niche of sports business, which is obviously a huge niche in sports betting, sports gambling, with the Action Network. You know, talk briefly about your time there.
Sure. I mean, obviously, I saw gambling coming. I don't think it was that hard. The fact that I was a resident of New Jersey, it was more in front of my face than anyone. You saw it on the trains and the buses and everywhere. And it seemed like I was in kind of this alternate reality compared to the rest of what was happening. But, you know, there's not many times in business where you have the opportunity to see something at its maturity, and at the same time, you know, then it's going to sweep the rest of the country. So, you know, in October, so May 2018, the PASPA rules get overturned, and Supreme Court, and immediately I'm saying to ESPN, my contract was through March of 2019, and I was saying to ESPN, I'm like, you guys are going to go like full bore into gambling now, right? And they're like, no. So I'm like, listen, I think I want to just get to this ahead of time, and, you know, if you let me out of my contract 6 months early, I'm going to go somewhere else. And they let me do that, and I went to the Action Network, got a piece of the company, because I was really adamant. I thought that, you know, the idea of kind of a quant sports betting reporting company made a lot of sense. And I think we did some great stuff. And after 5 years, it's time to look at renewing. And I just don't like, whenever I get comfortable, I kind of want to move on. And I've been collecting for such a long time. I've spent, you know, probably 20% of my net worth is in memorabilia. I think it is a real alt asset class. And I feel like there has not been anyone really covering it seriously on a day in and day out basis. I couldn't have done this 5 years ago, but there is so much. There are so many auctions. There are so many stories where, much like sports business, you can get, you know, a tentacle of it in memorabilia. And so just took 6 months to raise money and build this site, which we started this week, Collect Without the Vowels. And it's been amazing. I can't believe what it looks like. The reception has been unbelievable. And I'm really psyched. I feel like there's just so much to go here with everything to cover.
In these 6 months before the launch this week, and again, for people, it is, like Darren said, CLLCT, without the O in there, collect.com. Tell us about the fundraising. And were you pitching a deck to investors? I know you have some well-known investors.
Yeah.
Was it a germinating thing for years?
It wasn't for years, but I tell you, you know, I am the managing partner of a food and bev VC. I've raised over $15 million for other things in the past 4 years. So raising is easier for me. I think this is kind of precedent setting in terms of never has a quote unquote talent done the entire raise. I don't think for any media company.
Right.
Usually it's like farmed off or whatever. I was going to raise $3 million. And I raised $3 million in 13 days. And then I was like, okay, maybe we'll take a little bit more. But there were a couple wishes I had. I think not many people, although you say you want to take smart money, I always think about your investors being key to your exit as well. Who do they know? And I don't know if people think about that enough. Hmm. So I wanted to get, you know, billionaires and team owners. And, you know, the issue there is this is going to be money in their couch cushion. So I don't want to create problems. So we had to do a C corp so that they wouldn't get K-1s. And there were situations where in the actual deal, we had to do things with kind of like heirs and successors and things of, you know, when you have billionaires, there's a lot of other things. And I wanted to do that because I wanted to have, you know, Ted Leonsis and I have had a 20-year relationship. I know he loves, you know, memorabilia and collectibles. I've helped secure some stuff for him. David Blitzer, because he owns the Devils and I'm a Devil season ticket holder, we've started a relationship. He's awesome. He loves kind of the collecting world. Gabe Plotkin, I went to Northwestern with, owns the Charlotte Hornets. And Stephen Ross and Matt Higgins and those guys, the Dolphins guys and RSC, I wanted to get those guys in. And then I wanted to have about a third of the raise to be hardcore collectors. There are probably 3 to 5 guys on that cap table who have, you know, $10 to $20 million in collectibles themselves. And I think that's important too, because I wanted them to drive me and be honest and have a stake in the game. So that's kind of how it shook out.
Yeah, I was going to get to the names. You beat me to it. I mean, again, we're talking about a lot of ownership interests in sports. Obviously, Leonsis with the Wizards and Capitals, Blitzer with Harris, and of course, the Devils. And the Sixers, and of course, Steve Ross. And you said the raise went from 3. Is it basically around 4 now?
3 to 4, yeah.
Three to four. And your equity is?
More than half.
Okay. And yeah. If I could ask, what is the major use of the money? Was it launching the site, or is it?
I'm not trying to be a messenger or some of these sites that hire, like, you know, 100 people to start. So we're very lean, but I can share that our payroll is probably around 1.3 million when you consider our 7 employees. I needed to get an incredible editor. Our chief content officer is Kevin Jackson, who was with me for years and years at ESPN.
Yes,
and I had to get him away from Fox Sports. We have a biz dev guy, Ted Bishop, who was 30 years at ESPN. And then I got some young guns. I got this guy named Will Stern from Rally. So he's a 25-year-old kid, but is obsessed with memorabilia and was there, and I got this guy Matt Lieberman from ESPN. So, you know, we're young, so it's really that's the cost. And then I firmly believe we needed to have a New York City office. You know, it's okay to live in the COVID world that you can do things, but I feel like at least in the beginning of this company, we needed to touch knees. And so I come in every single day. And that's what we have to do, you know. So that cost something. Obviously had the tried to get the best space for the money, and we got into Times Square so we could say live from Times Square Studios. We're going to build a scrappy kind of studio that makes sense. And but the amazing thing about the fundraise was a lot of people had faith in me, and they were investing in me. And then a lot of people just had faith in the category, right? Like that it's so obvious. And when I don't like to, one of the things that I do when I'm raising money is I'm completely honest. I hate that hockey stick. This is our revenue. We're going to go from 2 to 15 to 30. I hate declaring revenue. You know, one of our investors said, hey, can you put together more of a kind of Excel spreadsheet on what our revenue is going to be and what levers you're going to pull? And I said, no, because I don't know what it's going to be. All I'll tell you is we're going to be the number one media site in this space by a mile. And everyone's going to have to invest with us. Now, whether the newsletter will be free or freemium, we'll make those decisions. You got to trust me. But we know that if we are the most relevant site out there, that we will be, everyone will have to advertise with us, sponsor us, that kind of thing. And a lot of people had enough faith to go on that.
I heard you in another interview talk about a goal of being the ESPN.com of collectibles. That's a simple and kind of easy way to put it. Is it, and I guess it's maybe all the above, covering the news of collectibles, putting out products. Is there a purchase angle to this?
I'm not going to compete with eBay. We're not going to be a marketplace, at least first. Okay. The news, you know, so the fact that the WNBA for the NBA WNBA draft is going to have hard tickets, and, you know, therefore the people who show up in Brooklyn on Monday are going to be able to have a Caitlin Clark souvenir in an age when, you know, we're all going digital. That's right. A story. You know, eventually I'm sure we'll get around to OJ and everything around there, although there's always a timing issue, obviously, when someone dies. But that is a real part of the collectible world. I mean, you know, yesterday there was one OJ signature that signed on eBay, and there were 460 in the first 3 hours today. Oh. So that, you know, that is, you know, I think there's respect for the person, whether you think they deserve it or not, and the family and stuff like that. But these things are happening in collectibles. And it is a significant part of the market. When Carl Weathers died, like I have never, you know, that thing, you know, people don't realize, you know, hey, I feel like I need a Carl Weathers piece. And you know, I think people are so attached to Rocky that just showed that, you know, they needed to get something. So we're going to cover that. And then, you know, obviously, we're going to have a newsletter. There's so many auctions going on. Basically, every Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, there's pretty much auctions going on. I love this world. I'm still investing in it. Yesterday, I bought the best George Washington in the world, you know, and I'm all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, you hit on a lot there. And I, just to tell our listeners, we're recording this Thursday afternoon, the 11th, a couple of hours after the news of OJ Simpson's death. And I had a question about that, and you answered it sort of immediately. You know, these things pop up, which brings up the question of authenticity, which I'm sure everyone wants to ask you about grading. And just take us inside of that. And I will preface this question by saying, although you didn't hear it from me, no one's listening, that there were times that Brett Favre's signature was not Brett Favre's signature in my 10 years with the Packers. And I'm sure that happens often. How do you deal with that? How do you discover it? How do you grade it? How do you authenticize?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a bunch of grading companies that are respected. Right. You know, PSA grades cards. They also grade autographs. JSA, Jimmy Spence Authentication, was just bought by CGC, which is owned by BlackRock. This grading is really getting, Beckett has grading. So sometimes, you know, as a collector, I operate in two ways. One, I'm Darren Revell. You see me, I'm in person. And at that stage, I am kind of like a troubadour. I am a part of the industry. I see myself as kind of like a storyteller, a lover. If you see me in person, I have to offer you face value, what that is worth. Right. However, if I'm on eBay or if I'm in an auction and I'm on the internet or somewhere else, I will try to beat you down. I will discover something that you don't know about something, and that gives me. That's why this world is so fun, because it gives such a arbitrage opportunity. But as far as autographs go, I have a story on Collect now about Jack Nicklaus, and JSA said he is the least failed signature.
What is that?
96% of the 100 and something autographs that come in every week on Jack Nicklaus were definitely signed by Jack. So they don't fail his signature a lot. And then I use that data point to go to the Jack Nicklaus people. And I said, you know, do you believe this? And they said, yes, he signs one piece for everyone he sees in person when he has a pen. Huh. And he signs two pieces for every household in America if they want. And I'm like, how do you know that? He said, well, we've been keeping a massive database since 2013. When he signs something, he does five signings of 5 hours each throughout the year. When he signs something, we put down the address and we put down what he signed. Wow. And so it's amazing to think. And obviously then some of the guys who try to take advantage are like, oh my God, this isn't worth. The JSA guy said Jack Nicklaus' signature should be worth zero, just based on how available it is.
How flooded the market is.
Yeah. So all these things are very interesting. I've had JSA fail a piece and Beckett say it's good. Now, in that scenario, there's a bunch of people who would say, okay, I'll just keep it in the Beckett slab. For me, because I'm going to go public with it, I cannot have that situation. I need basically all three top authenticators to say it's real, because I can never sell something that is debatably fake, nor do I want to talk about it. So I definitely have a lot more responsibility than the average bear. I once bought a Hand of God ticket, so the 86 World Cup Maradona game.
Right.
And when I posted it, people said, you know, the numbers don't look right. I think that's fake. Turned out it was already graded, and it was graded as real. And it turned out later that it was indeed fake. Now, most people would be like, okay, I'm just going to put it back on eBay and it will be the next person's problem. That's not what I do. I need to actually destroy it out of the population.
Mm.
So I need to, that needs to be taken out of the population. You know, I had worked with PSA to basically say, this actually is bad. We need to figure out how to get this out of the records, and it should be, you know, no one can have their hands on it. We need to destroy it. So those are the extra efforts that I have to make as a collector and, you know, telling these stories.
I'm curious, you talked about Jack Nicklaus, maybe the most authenticated signature. Is there an example on the other end of the spectrum where you see certain people like, that's not real, like most of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Michael Jordan, you could always tell on the M's and the J's in Michael Jordan, one of the most faked. You can see that. There's, you know, the harder ones are like Mickey Mantle's so unique, but people have, but the schemers have it down so well. You know, anyone can kind of figure things out. So sometimes it's like, oh, he would have never signed that. Now, we have a story this week a JFK item where it's printed his speech, "We Choose to Go to the Moon," from Rice in 1962. And we know that it was signed, the page was signed in February 62, right? So what the person did was, long after, they bought the signature, it just had the signature on the bottom of an 8x10 page, and then they printed the Go to the Moon speech, which is kind of an interesting thing, right?
Yeah. Because
then JSA slabs it and says it is an authentic Kennedy signature. The person who bought it yesterday, so it was sold yesterday, sold for $15,000. Now, a regular Kennedy signature on a page like that goes for about $2,500. So kudos to the consigner or whoever figured it out for putting something on. And they do that with Obama birth certificates. So Obama will sign something and then they'll print, you know, yeah, behind it. Or Trump January, you know, Trump indictment docs or something like that. But this is something that happens. And there is an ethical question because the person who bought it from the auction house notes that the auction house says this was done post-production. But then when that person sells it again, do they disclose that? Maybe not. And so, you know, that's an interesting thing. There's so many tentacles. We have a story that's coming next week on Do I Get It Graded? And that comes from during COVID, I got 9 million calls from my friends being like, I got a box of shoe, I got a shoebox worth of stuff. What do I do? I'm like, I don't have time to tell you what to do, but, you know, I can kind of give you some advice. So like we take a couple cards, we take a 1985 Roger Clemens rookie, for example, where people would, even if they got it in a mint condition, if they got a PSA 9, it would be $34. So in that case, you don't get it graded because it's going to cost you $45 to grade it. You know, so there's all these things that where people always say, oh, I have a Michael Jordan 1986 Flair rookie. Okay. So if it's a 1, it's $1,800. If it's a 2, it's $2,200. If it's a 3, it's $2,700. If it's a 4, it's $3,200. If it's a 5, it's $3,500. If it's a 6, it's $4,200. If it's a 7, it's $4,800. If it's an 8, it's $5,600. If it's a 9, it's $15,000. And if it's a 10, it's $180,000. Like, there's so much in between a 1. There's such little delta in between a 1 and a 6 or even a 7. And that, so people, you know, don't understand that. They say, I think I have the card, you know. And then it's been, I've loved getting into tickets, and it's been amazing just because, just to see the population of some of these tickets and what exists because people didn't keep them. And to me, you know, to have the only ticket graded of the first Ferris wheel ever, or, you know, win one for the Gipper where there's only four of them, that to me, that's so exciting. And it's a great piece of art. And, you know, the PSA then tells you what the population of these things are, which makes it pretty cool. And then you have to bet that no one's going to find, we're not going to have a ton of them that will surface, which has actually happened with a couple, you know, a couple that have surprised me.
I mean, I imagine you've gotten over the years all these questions. What's this worth? What's that worth? And you mentioned COVID, kind of a accelerator to that. I'm imagining you don't have that on the site, kind of here.
We're
for people.
We want to be a guide. So we want to tell you, for example, like, so 85% of people who go to PSA to get their cards graded walk away, because they ultimately think it might be too complicated, which is obviously an issue for their business. And we'd love to help them with that. But most people don't even know what a one is. What is the expectation? What, you know, if I have a chip here, or my corner is rounded, or it's off color, or it's, so when you don't know the rubric, when you don't understand exactly, like, so we think a lot of our site is going to be FAQ. Do you know how many times I get, my dad's turning 60. He's this fan. What do I get? Who do I trust? So obviously from a business standpoint, that's SEO. That's great for us, but it's also an affiliate model where we can benefit from that. I will tell you the one thing I've told my people is we are still very much going to do journalism. We are not going to sell out. I think we're dead if we're not doing the investigative pieces. If we're not, we need to be a hobby watchdog as well as be really happy when something goes for a ton of money.
And I was a little surprised to hear all the non-sports content. So what percentage are we talking sports versus non-sports?
Probably 70-30, but a lot, the bottom line is that, you know, the non-sports stuff is just so fascinating. You know, yeah. We have a situation coming up tomorrow on a poster from the 1967 a Monterey festival where Paul McCartney and John Lennon sketched out the poster. Mm. And this is the first time that the original sketch has hit. It's up to $1 million right now. Wow. And so as those numbers get big, no matter what it is, there's also we want to be the site that tells you it. When you go, oh my God, right? These conversation pieces that people talk about, the higher the number, the better chance people will say, this is wild. So we want to be all over. So I'd like to say 70-30, but who knows what comes up and what seems to pop.
Do you know your market out there? I mean, you mentioned you're about 20% of your portfolio. It's a real alt asset class. Do you know what the market is out there?
I mean, the number is it's a $500 billion annual market. Oh. I will say that I expect our site to get maybe 5% of its hits from China and Dubai in the Middle East. Like we were looking at some of this stuff as it was coming out.
Yeah,
and we got a lot of Europe. We, you know, these guys in Dubai are buying everything. You know, they're buying all these game used jerseys. They have museums worth of this stuff.
Hmm.
And so I'm interested to see the worldwide nature of who reads us. It's vast. We have no shortage of stories and we have no shortage of audience. And I feel like a lot of people I've used this before, but a lot of people have their fishing poles. They're on the dock, the fish is in the water, and it's either teach me how to fish or, you know, we're ready to fish. Let's go.
So you're going to have the journalism angle as you talked about. Are you going to be doing, you talked about this office setting up video. Are you going to do some video or you talked about a newsletter? All the above.
We're going to do some video. We're going to do in your words, there will be lawyers. I'm actually going to be a judge in one of our shows. We're going to do we're going to have people sign over their rights, kind of like a Judge Judy civil case. And it's going to be keep or sell. And we're going to have couples arguing over whether they should keep or sell an item. And based on what I deem as the market and the timing, I will issue a binding agreement, a legally binding agreement that, you know, that they have to do what I say.
Judge Darren.
We're going to take the antique roadshow idea and kind of give a little bit of speed to it. So, you know, the appraiser always works on it for 2 or 3 weeks. And I think there's some fun that's not part of that because, you know, they know it, they've worked on it. So we're going to get a bunch of appraisers. Someone's going to show their thing. And then, you know, they get 2 minutes to say how much it's worth. So we want to do that. There's going to be a bunch of shows. It depends on obviously sponsors and other things, but video will probably be 15% of our content.
And before I let you go, the phenomenon that you mentioned at the beginning that we've been talking about for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks is Caitlin Clark have elevated an entire sport to NFL-like following the past month. You talked about the ticket for the draft, which is Monday. Now, she's worn different jerseys at Iowa. I would imagine
there's only one black jersey, one gold jersey, and then she's worn a couple whites. So she's worn 6 total jerseys, and one of them was given away to Nancy Lieberman. That's what we know.
Oh.
So those jerseys are the record-setting jerseys were both in white. Those jerseys probably at this point could get a $500,000 offer.
Wow.
I almost think that if she wanted to make max money, she'd sell them this week, actually. If she did. if she did, I think this is probably the, I'm not saying it's the height, but it's hard. I mean, we've had other legends, not quite her, but, you know, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, Elena Deladon. I mean, I'm not sure, and I got ripped on Twitter for saying, for us, I would like her back at Iowa. I think that's the better decision now with NIL. She's only making $76,000 in her first year at the WNBA. So it's going to be interesting to see how it translates past beyond her first road games, which of course are going to be sellouts, how she's going to kind of play in the WNBA and how relevant they're going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I was probably one of those that came back at you because obviously the endorsement will carry, they're not going away for her.
Also the reason why you stay at Iowa.
Like, well, the salary's irrelevant. She'll elevate WNBA just like she elevated college basketball. And probably it's a more.
See, I don't know that. I think it's much more marketable to go for a college title than a WNBA title.
Well, I think for her, let's say the money's similar, you know, not greater either way.
Right.
And now she gets to play against the best people in the world.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of, in my mind, what her decision was.
Yeah. I mean, it's that they outdrew the men, you know, if you want to say, you know, cable versus broadcast. Well, they were on at 3 p.m. So throw that out. I think it actually is close to apples. I mean, that's amazing.
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, to do it. And I say this is to your point. The women's college basketball had Dawn Staley and Kim Mulkey and South Carolina and LSU and UConn before Caitlin Clark. And never rose to these heights. And they're going to have her, you know, they're going to have those people after Caitlin Clark. And they're not going to be anything like
that. I mean, I think the game itself has never been better on the women's side. And I'm not sure with the men, I'm not sure if it's, I mean, it's been pretty bad. I mean, it's almost like the tennis conversation with, I would much rather watch a women's match for the beauty of it versus the men where it's serve, either return it, congratulations, or don't return it. Yeah. You know, so I think there's many similarities there.
Well, again, to your point, if the WNBA had real salaries and then women's basketball had real NIL like the men, women's basketball would be the same. You know, that the men, they'd be, transfer portal would be huge. Players would go year to year. They'd go to the pros. We wouldn't know them like we know them now. And that's the concerns, the criticisms of the men's game.
Exactly.
It's just 20 years in advance of the women. Maybe that happens one day. Maybe not for the women. Last question, Darren. What's your favorite item? I saw you talk about you had a Warren Buffett over some dollar bills or something like that.
Yeah, I have the largest Warren Buffett signature in the world. It's believed to be. It's a foot and a half long on 18 uncut, uncirculated dollar bills. I have the Ferris Bueller vest. That one's awesome. One of one, the only one he wore in the movie. For you, I have the kid's glasses and Jerry Maguire, and Rod Tidwell's Cuba Gooding, one of his chains that he wore. So there's some really fun ones. And then I have checks. I have a lot of checks that have stories to it. So I have Amelia Earhart paying for nose surgery, JFK paying for his Washington Post subscription a year before he became president. Yesterday, I put out my new check that I got, Jerry Garcia paying for glasses at Lens Crafters. It's a lot. I have so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
It's an old asset class if there ever was one. Well, thanks, my friend. And everyone, collect.com, Darren Revelle's new venture with so many important backers behind it. I wish you all the best. I wanted to feature you today. I think it's really exciting. Has a lot of promise. Good luck to you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
I really hope you enjoyed that deep discussion into collect.com and Darren's background and our overlap and trying to make the sports business space more digestible for everyone. And I hope we've done that. Me in my space, he in his space, now in his third space, general sports business, then gambling, and now in collectibles, which he is obviously a consumer of as well as a journalist about. I want to give you a couple more rants before we leave for this Business of Sports podcast. Wrapping up March Madness, which spilled into April, I just want a couple comments. A month ago, we had a completely different world in college basketball. That's right. We didn't have anyone in the transfer portal yet. Now, as of yesterday, we have 1,450 men's basketball players in the portal. Think about that. Almost half the population of men's D1 college basketball is in the portal. Now, a lot of these people aren't going to get jobs aren't going to get spaces with these new universities and maybe not be welcome back to the old university, but that's where we are right now. And they're all looking for the package. It used to be, what about opportunity? What about academics? What about girls? Whatever it may be. Now it's, what's the package? What's the NIL package? And NIL really means pay for play. So you have an example out of Wisconsin, AJ Storrs, a guard who used to be at St. John's, now Wisconsin, and now has really opened up the bidding. He's in the portal, and he wants, according to reports, $1 million to go to his new team for 1 year, because everything's 1 year right now. Rumors have that he has turned down $750,000 from Kansas, and he's seeking out that $1 million. That's where we are. And I see it all over right now as we speak, all these transfers considering offers from other schools. And sometimes it will be about playtime. Sometimes it will be about opportunity. But for the top players, what's the number? It is free agency without a salary cap. And it's where we are. I don't know how to fix it. I do think in the general discussion of the college sports legal landscape, this idea of unionization should not be an anathema to management, to the NCAA, to conferences, to schools, because the only way they're going to get restrictions on movement and numbers and payouts, I think, is collective bargaining, where they give something like salary benefits, like minimum salary, like workers' compensation, like health and safety protections, like maybe even pension, but they get something back, which is a salary cap and which was restrictions on movement. Just like pro sports. I really think that's what's going to happen. Now, of course, it's happened on the coaching front forever. And now you have John Calipari. But John Calipari is leaving Kentucky for Arkansas for a lot of reasons. But it's not his salary. It's NIL, just like the players. He gets an NIL package from this Tyson guy, this chicken guy, that's going to be $5 million plus, we read. Think about that, $5 million NIL for a roster that's 15 players, really only five players that matter. That's a lot of money. So now you have it. It's out there right in front. NIL is the big ticket for the players on how you get talent, and NIL is the big ticket for coaches on how you get talent. Calipari is willing to take less at Arkansas but have this incredible budget for NIL. That's where we are. That's what Rick Pitino went to St. John's with a huge NIL budget. That's what we're looking at. So that's one thing about this month of March Madness, April Madness. Of course, Caitlin, as I talked about with Darren, a couple things to note on her. The WNBA, she will elevate that game. I have no doubt. I know people talk about it's not the league, not the exposure of women's college basketball. As I told Darren, women's college basketball was not where it was without Caitlin Clark. Right? Yes, they have South Carolina and Connecticut. And yes, they have Dawn Staley. And yes, they have Kim Mulkey and storylines. But they had them before Caitlin Clark, and they'll have them after Caitlin Clark. I think the new women's college basketball will be higher or elevated from what it was before BCC, before Caitlin Clark. But it won't be what it was the past year with her. On the WNBA side, she'll elevate. She's a force multiplier. I've talked about it many times. She will elevate that already. WNBA announcing 36 of the 40 Indiana Fever games on national TV. That's her team as of this coming Monday. My reaction was, what about the other four? I mean, she's a true force multiplier. Okay, a couple other things. Gambling. We have some minor updates on these two big gambling issues from baseball and basketball. So on the baseball side, we have news from the New York Times that Ippei Mitsuhara, the interpreter that allegedly stole $4.5 million from Ohtani, and Ohtani had no knowledge, nothing to do with it, according to his statement. The news is that Ippei may have taken more than $4.5 million, And B, he was able to change the settings on the bank account of Ohtani to not ding alerts and notifications to Ohtani. Okay, that will package neatly into the premise that Ohtani was not involved. This lawyer talking to you right now is not so sure. That doesn't satisfy me. I have questions. Question number one, did Ohtani report this? Someone who's ripped off of $4.5 million. I know he's got a ton of money beyond that, but you're telling me he did not report this, or he talked with his agents, attorneys, accountants, and they said, don't report this? Come on. And speaking of those three A's, where are they? Agents, accountants, attorneys, where are the three A's in his life? Don't tell me, oh, rich people, especially language barrier, they don't know what's going on. Power. Yeah. If he didn't know what was going on, I'm guessing his agent did at CA, his attorneys did, his accountants did, his financial people, his people structuring that contract to pay out in 10 years rather than pay out the next 10 years. Come on. I'm not buying it. I want to see more. Baseball's doing an investigation, as the feds are. Let's see where it goes. I'm not going to say anything about their investigation until it's over, but I still have a lot of questions after this New York Times report. And then in the basketball side of gambling, this was a layup, pardon the pun, for the NBA. Again, you had this Jonte Porter, a bit player for the Toronto Raptors, who was the subject of some prop bets in two games where he mysteriously ducked out of the games due to injury and illness. The numbers were flagged on those games for the under on the props. It seems like an easy layup for the NBA, and it's going to be. Again, we don't know that Jonte Porter was involved with this, but Jonte Porter, according to Adam Silver, may have committed a cardinal sin, and the punishment will include up to banishment. This is an easy one. He's not a well-known player. No one suffers in terms of ratings or interest if you drop this player through a trapdoor. And it seems like that's what they're going to do. It seems like that's what they're going to do. Adam Silver is given, again, pardon the pun, a slam dunk. Just get rid of this player. All is well. No gambling issue, etc. Okay, and finally, the Masters. There's so much to say about the Masters, how unique it is, how you have to give up your phone, how pristine it is, how the prices for food are still, you know, a couple dollars versus what it is at all the other tournaments. There's no yelling. There's no screaming. It's very serene. The thing that still sort of stuns me the most about the Masters is the CBS coverage and ESPN. I am shocked to learn every year they do not, I repeat, do not pay a rights fee to the Masters. Zero. The Masters does not charge CBS or ESPN a rights fee. But what they do is they limit the time of commercials. 4 minutes an hour is it. And as you know, watching the last part of the Masters, no commercials. And that's important to them. The coverage is important. You can't say certain things. You do whatever they say. You cover it the way you want. And they sell with their premium sponsors like IBM and Mercedes. They cover all the production costs for CBS with those sponsorships. I think those companies pay $23, $25 million. It is just amazing in this age of media rights where the NFL is getting $110 billion, the NBA is about to get a deal for $60 to $70 billion. The Masters continues to not charge, and they do so for control. They prefer control and influence over CBS versus a rights fee. Because if they took a big rights fee, they're ceding control to the people that pay the money. So it just strikes me every year, you have the Masters going on now and no rights fee. What's CBS paying for the Masters? Not a dime. That'll do it for this week's edition of Business of Sports. Always get the newsletter, and I'm giving videos, the lowest low-cost subscription. Hope you sign up. Go to andrew-brent.com. Always, Reels at Andrew Brent, too, at Instagram. Andrew Brent is my Twitter. Leave us a review, as I said. Hope you find this podcast unique and unlike any others out there in this space. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks to Jack Connell. Thanks to Sam Brandt, my musical producer. Thanks to you for listening. and I'll see you next week on the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.